Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Children, they matter. Oh, how appropriate. Apropos, as I like to say. Open our eyes. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and yes, you're at the right place, maybe at a much different time. As you can see, we had a late start on our program today. Well, it is what it is, folks. It just seems the way the energy flows when we have a program such as the one we have today, that there's usually some kind of an obstacle. But, you know, we are Progressive News Weekly, and we are not to be deterred. Deterred. Nope. No mess here. You get that? Deterred. I should say deterred. Ain't about deterred here. No, ain't no mess. You can bring it, but it ain't happening. So I'm saying all that to say that for many of our listeners that we're expecting our normal start at 6:30, you can also catch this episode on the archives. But I'm going to ask our special guest if he would be willing to hopefully join us next week so that we can really bring this information to a much broader audience. Because the information that we're storing for you is one that you're just not going to hear on mainstream. You're not even going to hear it in many alternative sources of media. So with that said, let me say without further ado, my name is Daryl Clark, and I'm so thrilled, honored, and pleased that you would take the time out to join me. For those of you who did hang in there, as we like to say, and are catching our late night edition, we're certainly going to keep it real for you. And again, bring this back. If our esteemed guest is able to next week. Suffice it to say, so much going on with the peace and justice movement, especially the justice part of it that's going on behalf of minorities, specifically African Americans, everywhere. My thoughts and prayers and sympathies go out to the family of Mr. George Gale, and we hope that they are coping with this situation. With it, all the due blessings that are possible. I will say that that family, can feel good in a sense that through that relative and friends as well, there are going to be some changes. Let's not mistake it. There are going to be some changes, folks. But I will also say, not so much from a political perspective. This isn't just about politics. This is about an agenda. This is about a black agenda, in fact. And that's what it has to be about in order for us to move forward. And until we have a black agenda, it doesn't matter who's in the White House. It really does not matter who's in the White House. Because at the end of the day, it is government for the people, by the people, and of the people. And I can tell you, proof of that being, look at how Commissioner Goodell is kowtowing now. I'm talking about the NFL commissioner. who sat down with Jay-Z, who made a statement, okay, haven't we gotten over this take a knee thing? All right, Jay-Z. See, we got to be careful. We got to be very, very careful. And I'm not trying to just knock him for the sake of knocking Jay-Z in any particular reason, because there are some things that the man has done that I'm sure will benefit many, many of us. But we have to look at the complete and broad spectrum of things. So, no, we haven't gotten over take a knee. As you can see, people worldwide now doing so. And guess what? The apology on behalf of the NFL is not enough. Not until Colin Kaepernick, of his desire, has a position in the NFL. That's where this has to stop. Because, see, money talks and BS walks. So that's how we have to handle this. So you can bring Jay-Z, you can bring the Pope, you can bring anyone into the fold, you can bring Al Sharpton, any of the others, any of the pundits that are out there, but until you do right by us as a people, there'll be no. So where I stand, and I'm asking you to consider, and we'll be doing more programs, that's just with the NFL. I don't know about you. I suggest you consider it. We're not doing NFL until we see some justice with Colin Kaepernick. See, that's low fruit. What we're dealing now with these police and the police brutality and the police killings and murderers of minorities specifically and especially African Americans, that's not so low fruit. Oh, it's fruit for the picking. Oh, yes. But it's not so low that it's something that we can impact relatively quickly. I mean, seriously, we can impact this NFL thing and all sports. We drive sports. We have leverage there. And so I suggest we use our leverage. That's my suggestion. This evening, for those of you who hung in there with us and are going to be able to catch this particular program, we have Mr. Tony Grant. And Mr. Tony Grant, for our new listeners, and I say for our new listeners, for a reason, is a research journalist. He truly speaks truth to power without fear, without shame, and without guilt, the way we're supposed to do it. Okay? And this evening, he's going to give us a bit of an update on the whole corona scenario. He's going to do a little bit of a recap as well. And he's even, I'm going to bring to the fore, give us some insight and perspective on the peace and justice movement for African Americans and the like. So we have, you know, quite a bit that we want to try to touch upon. This will be an abbreviated program this evening because we did have a late start. Just want to say something on that note, folks. Talk about energy, because all things work for good. That's my thought and my belief. Today, I had an incident where I spend my time in order to make a difference. And that's with a senior citizen facility. And it's not so much just a facility like a formal facility. It's a residential complex. When I say complex, there are several buildings. And I have a responsibility there to assist with the well-being and self-sufficiency, health and wellness of those seniors. And we have some young seniors who are in their 60s, and we have some old seniors who are in their 90s. And the average age is probably a late 70s, early 80s, a significant number. Aren't very mobile and are not technology savvy and frankly just need help. And many have no close relatives, and the friends that are there in the building are the closest people that they have to really interface with. So I consider it a joy and a blessing and an honor to work in that environment, to serve in that environment, because it's about what I'm about, and that is to help and uplift others, especially vulnerable populations such as our youth and our seniors. You've heard me say it before. I call that our bookends of our society. Well, so anyway, we had a line drop here, which I don't know when that last happened. So I must be really touching upon something hot. So, yeah, as I mentioned, one of the worst issues that have are themselves. So I come to work with this vulnerable environment of seniors that very well could be either carrying a viral situation or vulnerable to that situation. Being very careful and knowledgeable of what's at stake and what to do should there be an issue, and giving all honor and glory to the God that I serve, that I will be protected. Politically, there are those that would try to throw hurdles for me to stumble over. So today was such a day. And I ended up having an executive meeting, and we had to talk about different individuals that want to try to throw hurdles and obstacles at me. Folks, we are our own worst enemies. You know, Dr. Eddie Taylor, in his recent book, The Day the Crabs Got Out, Revitalizing Black America, hit it right on the head, the nail on the head, when he said, we are our own worst enemy. A good friend of mine who's been on the program before, a remarkable mind, in fact, Ms. Deborah Dow, she likes to put it this way. Black America will never get ahead until we learn to cut the heads off of our own snakes first, like Donald Trump. You don't know how sickening it is if you really know what's going on about Donald Trump. And you're in those circles and you're looking around the room and you're seeing out of 15 people, three that have undermined their brothers and sisters within the last days, if not weeks or months. I mean, really undermined folks that are doing good work just for the sake of politics. I don't do politics, folks. And I advise the sooner that we get out of politics, in other words, somebody putting us in a box called Republican or a box called Democrat, the better off we're going to be, folks. I truly believe that. And we're going to have more and more discourse on that topic as well. We're going to ask our guest today to give us his opinion, in fact, about that. I work with a bunch of, for example, Democrats who I wouldn't trust any further than I could see my fingers on my hand at the end of the day. You know, there was a song by the Undisputed Truth called Smiling Faces. Y'all might remember it, my old school listeners. Smiling faces. Smiling faces tell lies. Be careful of the smiling faces, right, Pelosi? Let's be very careful. Donald Trump ain't the only one. Laughter's good. So anyway, what that did for my day today was basically tie up 3+ hours because of some rhetoric, bureaucracy, political backstabbing, crabs in a barrel, snake biting, shark infesting mess that I'm sure most of my mature audience has dealt with, coming from their own kind. I worked 5 years with AT&T. Basically, 3 lawsuits later, all of which vindicated me. These are white racists that I had to deal with, and I learned very early on, within the first 2 years of coming out of college, which generated the first lawsuit, what society was about, what the white and black society was about. But in those 25 years, the 3 lawsuits, that was low fruit. The real mess that I learned to deal with in those 25 years was the 10 to 15 people, so-called bourgeoisie executives, that either tried to undermine me or would have nothing to do with the upliftment of this young black progressive man who refused to play politics. So, folks, we got to look at our thumb before pointing the finger. We got to look around and really discreetly think about what's going on here and what agendas are at play. And it's not necessarily easy if you've been in that lockstep for a period of time. When I say lockstep, you know, like march soldiers, you know, you ever see those Asian soldiers, you know, speaking of China and Japan and so forth, where the legs are straight. I think Russia may as well. And then as they walk past the Fuhrer, you know, the heads all go to the left or the right. That's a lockstep. Too many of us have gotten ourselves caught up in. And once you get caught up in that, it's hard to even see yourself. You can't see the forest for the trees. So I'm live on the road today trying to get this show program started, trying to get this show going. But I'm so honored to have an individual like Mr. Tony Grant. He understands the battle. He understands the frontline fight, as most of you all do as well. And I'm just, like I said, honored that you would humble me to even participate with this call in the manner in which we are doing so. So, again, we're starting late, but we're going to have Mr. Tony Grant on for a short period of time. I'm so hopeful, and I do believe if he is available, he will join us next week, and we're going to come strong. You know, Yosemite Sam, laughter's good, folks. Tell you, after a day like I had today, whew, man, oh, man, fake, phony, funky, we got to pull right from the holster. No ready, aim, shoot. Sometimes you just got to pull it right from the holster and blast it like Thunderbird Joe. He said, who's Thunderbird Joe? You know, I'm from Cleveland, and we come strong in the paint. Yeah. We used to say, and still do, got to be tough. Y'all know, many of you know, city or, you know, just come from urban America. You ain't got to come from urban America to understand, because I tell you, I've learned from relatives and my spouse and know that, hey, don't mess around with our country living folks either. Our rural folks, yeah, buddy, don't play around either. But anyway, yeah, this is all the way live here this evening, folks. As I make my way into the studio, this is live. But not to be deterred, like I said in the very beginning of the program, this ain't deterred. This ain't no mess. This is the real deal. So, as we prepare and go into studio right now, I hope I got Mr. Grant. I believe he is in studio. So I hope I got Mr. Grant you know, worked up a little bit to give him a little bit of good energy, not that he needs it, in order to kind of lay out a little bit of a carrot, if I can say that, just to, you know, help him to get started in his discourse for us today. As always, you're welcome to participate in this uncommon discourse in any way that you please. And so that number is 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. I'd like to see how you're feeling right now. Something on your mind? Did you have a situation with work or family or the like? Can you relate to what I'm talking about? Let us know. It's all good. We're all in this together, as the song says. We are all in this together. So, Progressive News Weekly, one thing, if nothing, is we keep it live. We keep it real. So this evening, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the latest on what's happening with the COVID-19. Again, a little bit of a recap on some things that Mr. Grant has spoken about in the past. And we're going to touch base on some, you know, some things that we had not necessarily spoke on as well. So, again, thank you. I see folks are plugging in because they know how we roll. Sometimes we run a little bit later than others, but we keep it live no matter what. So I thank all the listeners who are there. Mr. Grant is in studio. That number again is 347-838-9142. And I'd like to hear from you tonight because I'm riled. And I had to lay some folks straight. You know how people take advantage because they think that your kindness is weakness. And then when you punch them in the stomach, they look up at you like, how could you do that? I had to punch some folks in the stomach today, folks. So anyway, let's get Mr. Tony Grant on the line with us. And I so appreciate him because he really keeps it real. Let's see, do we have Mr. Grant on with us?
Good evening.
Oh, good evening. Yes, I don't know if you heard any of my discourse and dialogue up to this point, but yeah, it's been a little bit of a haul tonight. But we're here. We're resilient. You know,
that's
and
right.
That's one thing we can say about us. We've been through a lot in these, how many years? And I want to say 400?
Yes.
We've been through a lot, right, Mr. Grant?
Still standing. We're still standing, brother.
We're still standing. Yeah, they threw some punches at me. I tell you, real quick before I hand this over, I was watching some of the great fights, and I'm a sports buff. You know, I love the sports. I won't be watching football this year unless I see Colin Kaepernick somewhere on the field. And we just got to exercise our power. It's unfortunate maybe for NFL that they may be the focus of this. I was watching one of the great fights, and fights aren't like they used to be. I'm talking about heavyweight and middleweight, you know, Leonard and Tommy Hitman, Hearns, and all those guys. And so, you know, Macho Camacho, we throw him in there a little bit, lightweight. But I was watching – oh, Hagler. Come on, folks, talk to me. And so I was watching Muhammad Ali. Now, we know – two great battles that Muhammad Ali engaged in. I'll throw one at you. Somebody can throw another, but I'll just throw one. George Foreman was one. The other is a given. Now, if we was on, what's the name of that show that my homeboy, does, the Family Feud.
Steve?
If Steve, yeah, Mr. Harvey, you know, he's my homeboy. He was our rival. In fact, my high school and his high school were rivals back in the day. So this was one of those questions, and we needed one more for the bonus. This should be a given. Now, one of the two greatest fights that he engaged in, and he fought multiple. One was George Foreman. Who was the other fighter that he fought? And it was just known that was one of his greatest adversaries. And so, any guesses? Not the first fight. We ain't talking about Sonny Liston. I'll give you that. I'm talking about who was it? They're coming out of Philly. Come on now.
The toss-up question for the audience. What kind of question is this, brother? It can only be. I think that his greatness is diminished by the fact that he had to be on the scene along with Muhammad Ali, because he was a tough character out of Philly. And I mean, he was great in his own right, but because he had to share the stage with Muhammad Ali, that's why we don't think of Frazier that way.
That's right. We don't think of Frazier like that. And I see the hands coming up, but too late, you know. Mr. Grant had the mic, so he gets it. And so I was watching the great fight with Muhammad Ali, and I could, you know, after I watched it, and they played him back-to-back, because, you know, he fought three times.
Yes.
And I was just watching that great battle of two great, truly highest in their particular sport fighters. And I think back on that and say, wow, you know, we got some history. And so sometimes you just got to go to battle like that. And I went to battle today, and I had to let some folks know, okay, now you know who I am after a couple bruises and broken jaws and really messed up faces and stuff. But, you know, I'm here to talk about it, and we got Mr. Grant with us to talk a little bit. And so with that said, Mr. Grant, last time you were here, you really hit us with some enlightening information about COVID that I think a lot of folks didn't realize. Some folks may have heard, but, you know, you always bring it with documents and the like. And then since then, heck, we've had this social justice thing hit on top of that. So it's been a heck of a year. That's all I can say.
Well, you're right about that, and I think
talk to us, Mr. Grant. Tell, you know, geez, Louise.
Yes, sir, Brother Darrell. It's really been an unusual situation. You know, you and I have been around a little while, had a chance to see a lot of changes and a lot of unusual circumstances. But I think that we can relate what we're seeing from the whole coronavirus, if we can manage to give a synopsis. We can see how the coronavirus situation is becoming more and more clear and mirroring, imitating, recapitulating what we've seen with swine flu, what we've seen with Zika virus, what we've seen with Ebola, mm-hmm. we've seen with SARS. Where these situations come, there is a scare, there are some tragic deaths, and then everything goes away. This, however, then, if you will, like SARS on steroids, in that the entire world was locked down temporarily. And so in view of that, we can take a look at the very beginning and we can breeze through the whole story. We know now that this virus escaped, somehow got out of a P3 level laboratory in Wuhan, China. And from there, we have to be aware that the degree to which the numbers of tragic deaths seem to mount and escalate, we have to understand that in many places, especially America, if you look at what the CDC has done regarding its mandating doctors to list all pneumonia deaths, to list them as either Wuhan, China coronavirus deaths, or to list them as a death where the coronavirus had a part to play. And so that statistic would be a pneumonia statistic and a Wuhan, China coronavirus statistic. And so the doctors have been formally instructed to list all respiratory illnesses that lead to death as partially or in total, completely, caused by Wuhan, China coronavirus. And so the numbers of people who die every year from pneumonia, somewhere in the neighborhood of 60,000, that number has been added in America to the so-called COVID-19 death toll. As you know, we've got a tragic number of around 100,000, I believe. I'm sure, I haven't been keeping up. And if 60,000 of those are the ordinary, or if you will, routine or the normal number if we include the fact, if we understand that the normal number of annual pneumonia deaths in America is 60,000, and that we've attached the blame to COVID-19, and if we add COPD, and we add the bronchitis deaths, severe bronchitis, if we add the asthma, severe asthma attack deaths, and then if you look at the documentation given by the CDC directing doctors regarding how they should list cause of death for this year, they also have included death from severe high blood pressure as a COVID-19 death. And so in the scheme of things, knowing that this is a condition, a infection that emerged from a bacterial warfare laboratory in Wuhan, China, and as we saw the numbers escalate, we were never told the truth about how these numbers were actually being determined. How is it determined that you died from COVID-19? We weren't given that information. However, doctors around America were assigned very clear guidelines regarding how they determine cause of death. And this has artificially increased the numbers that we see when we see the coronavirus death statistics. Now, on top of that, we are in a situation now where we are depending upon the tests to tell us how we're doing, the flattening of the curve, and how we're doing with the flattening of the curve. And so everyone needs to take a look at some of the documentation that's available to us when we want to find out what's really going on. It's a document called the CDC 2019 Novel Coronavirus Real-Time RT-PCR Diagnostic Panel. This is a document produced by the CDC to instruct medical professionals regarding how they should administer the test. You know, the test that we're using now to determine, is it coming back? Is COVID-19 coming back? The test we're using to determine whether or not is it time to open the economy now? This test is carefully described. It's the method of administering the test is carefully described in this document. And at the end of this description, as you find in so many other documents where the medical establishment protects itself from liability, it is explained at the end of the document that the results of these tests cannot be used to definitively determine COVID-19 infection. They're saying that the test is not reliable. They're saying that here's how you give the test, but don't blame us later on when you find out this test is really not any good. This is the test that we're all using to determine, are we safe now? Is the virus going away? It's a test that is not reliable. And, for example, you can test positive if you have had a flu vaccine in the last 10 years. You can test positive for COVID-19. The test doesn't really test for COVID-19. It tests for a group of antibodies that you could have in your body for a wide range of reasons. But you have to go to the CDC website to see this. It's not going to be on the news. CNN is not going to report this very interesting fact. You're not going to read about it in the New York Times or USA Today or the Wall Street Journal. And so, as we recap or sum up what's going on with the coronavirus, it is a virus that severely frightened the entire world. It's a virus whose death toll numbers have been manipulated. And it's a virus who, now that we are trying to find out, are we okay? Is it okay to tuck my head out of the house and look and see if it's safe? The determination as to whether or not it's safe is being extrapolated from a test that is worthless. These are things that are not going to be in the news. Now, for those who are very dutiful about wearing their masks and their personal protective equipment, fine, okay. But I think that all of us should work more diligently to keep our immune system strong. The size of a virus is such that it's so small, it can sneak in behind your mask. But if you are eating a very wholesome diet of high-level nutrition, fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, plenty of water, that is, and of course, if you're aware of the immune-building green medicines, the echinacea, the even garlic, even ginger, astragalus, these are more effective ways of maintaining a self-defense through the power of your immune system, ways that your public health officials are not going to tell you anything about. I mean, of course, they've been trained. They're not trained to know anything about these things. So here we are with this coronavirus situation, and suddenly now we have a new situation with the horrific, murderous video taken by the 17-year-old, fortunately, so we could see this murder happening. And now what do we find? The thing we find is that I think that the same way we're not getting the right news, the kind of news that we think that our news organs should be giving us, I mean, everyone should know that the test is a fake. Everyone should know that. But, of course, it's not good for business. People being worried about being infected, that's good for business. You sell the vaccine. We have news about the vaccine as well. But I'll go back to that. I don't know how much time we have, but I want to quickly make clear that we should all understand from the beginning, that Black Lives Matter has always been dependent upon funding from George Soros, the Nazi. George Soros is a Hungarian Nazi who was featured on 60 Minutes speaking proudly about his days as a 14-year-old Hungarian Jew who helped an older man. The older man used the 14-year-old because he knew that the Jews that were hiding from the Nazis would trust this 14-year-old kid, and he would go into the Hungarian Jewish ghettos, and he would expose the hidden Jews, and they would be turned into the Nazis, and then he, along with the Nazis and his adult associate, would divide up the wealth or the possessions of these Jews who had been turned into the Nazis. And this he described on 60 Minutes as something that was the beginning of his life. He began to awaken. He proudly spoke about how he turned in these Jewish people. And this is who George Soros is. He has been around the world doing damage to economies. Albania, he has virtually destroyed the economy of Macedonia, Romania, Hungary, his home country, and in Latin America, Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico. He's a currency trader. He does things in the nation that causes the currency to collapse. And now he's funding Black Lives Matter. There would be no Black Lives Matter without George Soros. What is his purpose? Does he love black folks? Good old Nazi George Soros, does he just love us so much? Or is he trying to do the obvious, create racial conflict? We, dear Brother Daryl, I'm going to slow down now and give you a chance to get in. We have to stop believing in this fake right and left or this fake conservative and liberal, this fake dichotomy that's meant to get us to fight each other when we have people like George Soros trying to destroy us. He's working behind the scenes, but instead we're mad at the police. For all the things that go wrong with the police, George Soros is more of an enemy to you than the police, but nobody even speaks about George Soros. Now, I'll pause there for a moment, Brother Darrell.
How do you spell Soros?
S-O-R-O-S.
And so George is a funder of Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
Now, with everything that's happened in the last month, even 2 months, but I'll give you the month since, you know, the video, I'll say the acclaimed video, which I sent you some information, Tony, and there's lots of conspiracy theories about that whole thing. I'm not going to go there. We're going to save that one for the next time that we come together, folks. But
there's a lot
conspiracy theories about, you know, what really happened, why it happened, the whole murder. I mean, but, you know, that's been a history of basically it was an assassination. And hopefully the next time we come together, we can talk, we can bridge that into a conversation with regard to Martin Luther King. Some
All
people
right.
can handle this conversation and some people cannot.
I hear you.
You know, there are some people that will want to jump in on this thing right now. Even if we're at towards the end of our program for this evening, then there are others that are saying, oh, I don't want anything to do with that. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, I heard somebody once say, and it speak about people that I work with, someone said, you know, we need to stay in our lane. I have an issue sometimes with that term. I'm more of a think outside the box than stay in my lane kind of person. You know what I mean? Because if you stay in your lane, it's hard to win a race. I mean, just watch, you know, Indy racing or any other kind of race. I mean, if you just stayed in your lane, how are you going to pass?
Yeah, stay in your lane sounds almost like that lockstep stuff you were talking about before.
Yeah, I don't do staying. You know, I look back on my history and I think about folks who subscribe to that too much. Stay in your lane. They've all either been backstabbers, and I'm just looking at a history of it, people that I wasn't able to trust, people who didn't have a broad-based thinking, and therefore people who were easily influenced without thinking on their own, because you're doing as you're told. You're staying in your lane.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I get leery about that whole process of staying in your lane. I think we need to think more outside the box. And I'm saying all that to say, coming back to what you were saying about George Soros and how he's, you know, funded. In the last 2 months, this Black Lives Matter thing has really taken off on the heels of the guilt in some cases and the awareness, frankly, in other cases of people around the world. And so we're seeing corporations who have no shame. I'd say if corporations are right there with politicians, but I'd say they're a close second in terms of having no shame. You just think, we learned in business school, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Oh, if there were ever a more truthful statement. I mean, they'll sell you half a gallon of ice cream and give you 58 ounces. I mean, let's keep it real here, folks. They'll tell you, okay, we're selling you a package of Ziploc bags. Normally you get 100 and now you get 90, but the price is the same. We got to be very careful. I don't know which is more unscrupulous. Like I said, our politicians or corporate. And I know I spend time in corporate. I'll be a whistleblower. You know, it's about taking advantage of the consumer and not necessarily looking out for the interest of that consumer. So I'm saying that to say I see a lot of corporations now, and for all of those who have nonprofits, take advantage of this, that are saying, we support Black Lives Matter. We support justice for all people. I'll give you an example. I saw one yesterday. Excuse me, this is Thursday, Tuesday, Target. I got one from Walmart. I got one from Bed Bath Beyond, one from my bank that I bank with. I can't name enough. I probably 7 or 8 in the last, just this week since Monday, are coming out talking about how many dollars, tens of millions of dollars. For example, I think it was Target that said they're just starting with $11 million to pour into nonprofits that are supporting peace and justice movements. So I'm going to have to start me another couple of nonprofits. I want some of that money. Joking but serious. So where's all this money been? Did this just start now? They were never aware that blacks were disenfranchised? Is that what I'm hearing? If that's the case, CEOs, you're really putting yourself out there in a bad light. I mean, why not?
I think they of course, they're catching the wave, and the questions you're asking, people are not asking. People are just thinking, oh, how nice. they're doing the thing that we want them to do. And the money that's getting to Black Lives Matter from whatever source, the control apparatus of Black Lives Matter, the people at the top, they understand exactly what George Soros wants. And all you have to do is watch, and you'll see that nothing in the way of resolving conflict, moving us forward so that we can work harmoniously and productively, none of that will ever come from Black Lives Matter. There may be splinter groups, people who have gone to participate in Black Lives Matter with perfectly good intentions, and they may independently actually come up with something productive, positive, and intended to move us forward with harmonious interaction. There may be some like that, but the control apparatus of Black Lives Matter is completely under the guidance of George Soros, and George Soros's stated objective is to create race war in America.
Oh wow.
He has gone from economy to economy, selling the currency short. But in order for him to know the currency is going to suddenly become cheaper, he has to do something within the context of the social structure to cause the economy to collapse or to cause chaos. He's done it.
Mm.
I mean, he's been doing it all over the world, Albania, Macedonia, Ukraine, Hungary, Romania. His track record is very clearly known. He thrives on the money he can make from creating a conflict, from creating a conflict that breaks down the fabric of society, interrupts the normal economic activities, and causes economic chaos. That's how he makes his money.
Keep talking.
Well, so the situation is that we, as we struggle to make a way for the improvements that we know need to happen in our society, we look at this Black Lives Matter thing. I mean, it's a lovely name, Black Lives Do Matter. And we think, well, let's jump on board. But we don't really know where the train is going, because we never peek behind the curtain. We are too busy believing in CNN or MSNBC or ABC. We're too busy believing in the nightly news hour, the sober voices of NPR radio. And so these are not places where we're going to get the truth, who's behind the scenes, who's really doing what. Many of the people who read the New York Times every day have no awareness that the New York Times reputation as the paper of record, which was always suspect, is now completely gone now that the paper has been sold to Carlos Slim Elu. Carlos Slim Elu is a world-class dealer in illegal drugs. He has billions that he's made selling illegal drugs, and he owns the New York Times now, and he has to use that paper, as all businessmen use it, to promote his secondary businesses. People who are wealthy on the level of Carlos Slim Elu, who are drug dealers, have to find places to park their money. And so we know that the number one place to park your money on Wall Street is in the drug companies, because they're so fabulously profitable. So you're not going to read anything that's true about drugs in the New York Times, and you're not going to read anything true about vaccines in the New York Times. And while we're talking about vaccines, let me just touch upon the latest vaccine news that caused the stock of the vaccine manufacturer Moderna. Moderna is one of the companies that's in the running to get their vaccine approved. They published a press release that caused a sensation on Wall Street, because they were able to say that they had completed their first trial of their vaccine on humans. I don't know who these humans are that are willing to lay down their bodies, be sacrificed with this brand new kind of vaccine. This kind of vaccine it's not that it's a Wuhan, China coronavirus vaccine that makes it new. It's a DNA, RNA vaccine, and that has never happened before. At any rate, the results they reported were that having administered the vaccine to these willing human beings, that they were able to detect in the bloodstream of these test subjects that 17% of them had actually produced antibodies against the Wuhan, China coronavirus. Now, 17% of the test subjects producing antibodies, which is what the point of making the vaccine is all about, that's an 83% failure rate, if I'm doing my mathematics properly. That means that 83% didn't produce antibodies. Yet, this caused a sensation on Wall Street. They say that the stock went up such that Moderna, the company that's giving the report, their stock exchange worth, their worth from the point of view of their stock, went up over $1 billion. And the point I'm really making is that most of us need to take a good look at our own personal regimes and see how well we're taking care of our health rather than depend on a virus that has, I'm sorry, than a vaccine that has an 83% failure rate. None of us, I don't think, would think about buying automobile tires from a company whose manufacturing record showed an 83% failure rate. None of us would buy any laptop computers from a company whose products were known to have an 83% failure rate. We wouldn't even buy paper clips from a company like that. And that's the vaccine that's causing all the sensation. By the way, they had to do animal trials before they could do the human trials. Thank the Lord that they're at least, being that sensible. And the animals experimented on were ferrets. Ferrets are rodents, I guess, and so I guess I just never heard of ferrets. I mean, I don't know that much about what kind of animals they use in experimentation. But the ferrets were given the vaccine. Time was allowed for the ferrets to produce antibodies. Some of you may know that it takes 7-8 days to produce any antibodies. And after the time expired, these ferrets were injected with the Wuhan, China coronavirus that they were now supposed to be protected from because they had received the vaccine. And all the lab animals died, 100%.
Wow. Wow. So this was done on animals. They haven't really tested this in humans at this point.
What they've done with humans is they said 17% that produced the antibodies, and they took blood from those 17% and they mixed it with a Wuhan, China coronavirus concoction, and they say that somehow the blood of these people who had produced antibodies in reaction to the vaccine, that the blood seemed to slow the activity of the virus. And on that news, 17%, meaning an 83% failure rate, and on the news that the blood of those who did show antibody action, that it seemed to have an impact on slowing the growth of the virus in an experimental situation, on that news, their stock went up $1 billion.
Wow. So that stock went up $1 billion on an 18% success rate.
Right. The success rate was 17. The failure rate was 83. 17%.
17. I gave them an extra point. Whoa. Can you imagine, folks, if we all had an efficiency of 17% in everything that we did or where we worked?
Fired immediately.
And getting that kind of a, wouldn't even be a blink. You wouldn't even catch the blink. So what that's very telling, because it speaks to where this whole movement is heading. It's about coming out with the vaccine for trillions, because if that's a billion, 18%, we're quadrillions, but more, at least trillions. I don't think we're at the billions. I think we're talking global, so we're probably talking trillions of dollars that are at stake here. You know, if we can, and with the few minutes that we do have left, question from one of our listeners. Just thinking back what I was saying about with, you know, billions and billions at stake, this testing that's coming out, you said that you had some information about the testing. Is there something that we should be concerned about in terms of the testing? I know we were talking about the tracking piece of that at some point, or
yes,
tracing.
The contact tracing. The concern over the test is that we are treating it as something that has great reliability. When a person takes the test that the CDC has declared, if you go to their literature, has no accuracy. They're saying, you can't hold us do not use this test to determine if an individual is infected with COVID-19. They're saying that. This test is not accurate, right? And so with everyone waiting with bated breath to see the result of future testing so we can find out, did we in fact flatten the curve, or is the COVID-19 coming back? And knowing that you can test positive if you've had a flu vaccination in the last 10 years, we know that all the test numbers are completely useless. They're unreliable. And we also know that this plan to do this contact tracing, they'll use the test as a pretext. Oh, you're positive for coronavirus, which we know might actually be from a flu vaccine. And since you're positive, we want to know about everybody you've contacted in the last, I don't know how long, 6 months? I don't know how they're going to do it. And so now you have to write those names down. Then those people have to be checked and tested. It's a draconian control measure, and it's all about testing you for something that they have no test that they can accurately test you for. It's a control mechanism.
So they're going to want to know everyone that you've been in contact with, period.
Exactly.
Over a certain period of time.
It's a grand scheme of, and if you are following the actions of Bill Gates with his deadly vaccine agenda, they now count 490,000 innocent, young, healthy, happy children in India who have been given polio by the Bill and Melinda Gates polio vaccine campaign. 490,000 who would be walking around normal. Well, that's who
they
give.
Did you say children?
Yes, they give the polio vaccine to children in India. That's what Bill Gates is doing. And 490, he's finally been kicked out of India. They say, you got to leave.
When you say kicked out, he's been barred from the country of India?
The Indian Health Department has said you can't continue this Bill and Melinda Gates vaccine campaign here anymore. You're harming our future. Now, come on now. We've talked about it before. In 2012, the number was 47,500. Published in the Journal of Medical Ethics, it was an ethical question. How can someone who's got a massive vaccine campaign going, how can you cripple 47,500 children? If you are doing vaccinations in Sandila, by the time you get to Lucknow, the word must be coming down from Sandila. You know, when we were here last week, 50 of these children in the little tiny town of Sandila, they're now paralyzed. So when you get to Lucknow, you say, hold it, let's stop vaccinating so we can figure out what's wrong. Way before you get to 47,500, unless that is your purpose to cripple the children. Then you keep going until you get to 490,000. So now it's 490,000. In 2012, it was only 47,500. And so the public health authorities of India, I guess the ones who weren't paid off by Gates, said, you got to go now. This is information we should be talking about instead of trying, we're going to do whatever we're going to do with the bad police who need to be gotten rid of. Let's just get rid of the bad police and move forward. But you know, I don't know anything about that subject, so that's my opinion.
So, just for our listeners, and I always like to leave our listeners with a little homework and get them engaged. And we do have a listener that would like to comment or have a question. We'll get to the 973 number. Just for information, though, because I like to give factoids. It just builds character and strength for our listeners. We can Google Bill Gates barred from India.
You say we can Google, are you there?
Yeah, that was okay. My question.
We can
research that. We can validate that.
Yes, you can certainly validate Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation paralyzes Indian children. I mean, certainly, hold on a second. I didn't bring the document with me, but it should be, I can give you the actual 2012 article publication that exposed the first 47,500. Let's see. Yes, I'll be able to get my hands on it. It's right here. It is It is the Journal of Medical Ethics, 2012, April-June edition, page 114 through page 117.
What was the reference again?
It is the Indian Journal of Medical Ethics, 2012.
Indian Journal of Medical Ethics, okay.
April-June, pages 114 through page 117. Yes, sir, Joe.
Indian Journal of Medical Ethics, okay.
That will indicate to you that 47,500 innocent, happy, healthy children who went to get the free polio vaccine from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation ended up being paralyzed with polio. The polio vaccine is very suspect all around. And what I fault Bill Gates for doing this, knowing what he's doing, but even as venerable a vaccinator as Dr. Jonas Salk has declared in his testimony under oath before the United States Senate Health Subcommittee, he declared, and I'm quoting him now, vaccination against polio is the principal, if not the sole cause, of polio in America since 1961. This is Dr. Jonas Salk, who's not a wild-eyed anti-vaccine. It's just this information is not reaching us through the media. We have to stop depending upon the news media. The news media is not in the business of telling you the truth. The news media is in the business of stage managing your reality for the benefit of those who own the media.
Bring on a listener before we close out for the evening. We have a regular listener. I recognize the number, at least the four last digits. You know, after a while you memorize the last four digits of thousands of numbers. Hello, you're on the air, 973 and last four digits, 8524. Are you there?
Hello. I'm here.
Yes.
You doing? How you doing, gentlemen?
How are you? And recognize the voice, Mr. James, I want to say. I'm not sure.
You're correct.
All right. This is scary. I recognize the numbers. And, well, thank you for listening in again. And tell me what comment or question do you have for myself, Mr. Grant, or just a comment of your own? What's on your mind?
Okay. Mr. Grant was talking about the vaccine for the polio and how it eventually ended up paralyzing those children. I want to say about 6 months ago, I took my 15-year-old son for a physical. Maybe about 8 months ago I took him for like a physical so he could play sports or whatever. And his doctor, she was pushing the HPV vaccine on him. Well, on me. Well, he needs to get it. It's a series of three shots and this and that. And the more she kept pushing it, the more I kept, you know, telling her no. Almost to the point where she went in that drawer and she was going to, like, stick my son with this needle about this HPV vaccine. So the reason why I'm saying what I'm saying is it's resonating with me about, you know, Bill Gates and doing the whole thing with the polio vaccine. It's very serious. Like, that's what they're out here doing. Like, they want to keep injecting these kids and stunting their growth and making them paralyzed or whatever the case may be. And that kind of, like, hit me tough. Like, I mean, like, wow. Because I saw it firsthand.
It is very serious, Brother James. And you are to be congratulated for rescuing your son from that situation.
Mm-hmm.
It is a situation where there should be no children injected with the human papillomavirus, which is what the HPV is. But ever since Obamacare, I'm sorry to the audience, doctors have been put on a rating scale. And if they can get you to accept the injection, their rating goes up.
Oh, wow.
What does that have to do with Obamacare? Help us out.
What does it, please, again, please, Dale, what does it have to do with?
Obamacare.
Obamacare set up this rating system that when doctors, when it is learned that the patient is not picking up the high blood pressure drug that was assigned by the doctor or the patient refused to accept the prescription, that lowers the doctor's rating.
Oh, wow. This is
so
deep, brother.
So a number of vaccines. Certain things increase their rating, and one of them is prescription meds. Is that what you're saying?
Prescription meds and vaccines, and the CDC is the one who calls the tune, who decides what is the what are the required, you know, when you show up to see a doctor, then this is the opportunity for the vaccine billionaires and for the prescription drug billionaires to make a sale. And the doctors really, unfortunately, even though our doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, these are people who went into the medical field with great earnestness and a full heart, but they have been turned into shills for the vaccine billionaires and drug billionaires. And this Obamacare rating system now ensures that doctors will not be shy. They will not fail to do their duty for the drug and vaccine billionaires.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to say wow, too. I just wanted to see the link with the Obamacare piece there. I know for myself and many others that I know, under that Obamacare, my health care became unaffordable for me. So you want to say I'm middle class, I guess you can. It really put a strain on me. That's where a number of folks actually lost their benefits or the level of